The Guardian.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Respect, respect, respect. Today, we tread the difficult line between appeasing those listeners who are bored of us talking about Jose Mourinho and talking about Jose Mourinho. Spurs questions too, though. Is their 3-0 victory at Old Trafford a sign they can win the title? And does Lucas Moura's performance mean the best time to buy players is in January? We'll open the Carabao box, discuss some vague international retirements, and look ahead to this weekend's football too. And that's today's Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Andy Brassel, hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well. It's nice to see you.
Likewise.
Lars Sivertsen, hello.
Hi, Max.
Chris says, what would Lars definitely not reheat for breakfast?
I saw that. I'm thinking, fish I might not do.
Okay.
Because that's one of the few foodstuffs I'm picky about, is fish.
Okay.
Fish needs to be good. Bad fish is terrible.
By the way, that doesn't smell good in the microwave either.
No. Yeah.
That's the most Scandinavian you've ever sounded. You sort of went from, when you started talking about fish.
Yes.
Yeah. What did you have for breakfast?
Nothing. I came in very late last night from a holiday, and there was no time for breakfast, only time for sleep. So I've had like almost a pint of energy drink this morning.
Did you go on holiday with John Arisa?
I did not.
Barry, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
You've bought the Carabao box.
I have, but I haven't opened it yet because our lives are so dull. We're really excited to see if the battery has run out since it was last opened in, I think, March.
Well, Carabao Cup review is in part two.
Okay.
So it will sit there dormant until then. In the meantime, we'll discuss Manchester United 0 Spurs 3. Should we start with the game itself? I know it was a few days ago, but it was a great game of football. And on the pod on Monday, Andy, we were talking about whether Jose would get a reaction from his team. And we were all wondering if basically they just wander out and down tools. And they didn't.
No, they didn't. And watching the game the morning after, knowing the result already, which is not a preferred habit of mine, I was surprised actually at how good Manchester United were, certainly for the first hour or so of it. I mean, the thing is, you can't really talk about them being unlucky, can you? That's not reasonable either. I think you can criticise them for the way they defended in the second half and still say that, yeah, they've not chucked it in or anything like that, but you know, there's a certain level of results and certain level of performance that's acceptable at Manchester United, and he's got an awfully difficult job to turn it around now. Even if, you know, they haven't chucked it in, and even if the fans still love him.
I was trying to do as much on the game as I possibly could before we got to whether the fans do love Jose.
Yeah, I tried as well, but it just didn't work.
It is really hard, isn't it? Let's try and keep on the game for a second, Barry. Spurs were, in that second half, were excellent. Lucas Moura was he could be Spurs' Mo Salah this season.
Yeah, he was outstanding. Brilliant performance, scored two goals, and Manchester United's defending made it quite easy for Spurs. You know, like Andy, I think Manchester United played quite well. That performance was a hell of a lot better than the one they put in against Brighton in defeat. But their defence is an absolute mess. I think Gary Neville described it as chaos, and that's what it was. And not to take away from Spurs, though, because their performance, they deserved a 3-0 win, even though Manchester United didn't play that badly. Harry Kane's goal was wonderful, but again, bad defending allowed him to score with what was an excellent header. I mean, leaning backwards to steer a header in from about 14 yards was just remarkable. And yeah, Moura, brilliant. But again, the Manchester United defending, whether Jose has lost the dressing room or not, that defence is not going to be sorted out anytime soon.
Spurs, often the question is asked, is this the turning point? They won at Stamford Bridge last year and everyone went, wow, this is the moment now. Spurs have turned the corner. Spurs have got a really bad record away at other top six sides, Lars. Is this the turning point?
It was certainly been encouraging for Pochettino to see the team recover as well as they did from the first half, because it's not, it feels like a thing that Spurs wouldn't have done before. They've gone up to Old Trafford, played very badly in the first half, and then actually completely turned it around and gone for it. That will have been a very big deal for them. And Moura, I think, is adding something that this squad has lacked, because it's remarkable how similar this Spurs lineup has looked over the last couple of years. And the one thing they've always been a little bit short on, in my opinion, is going forward, they've lacked someone with a little bit of extra pace, a little bit of trickery, can take on people one-on-one, someone who can create a little bit of chaos. And while you can accuse Moura of being slightly unstructured in his play sometimes, he does give them a bit of an X factor going forward, which I think they've lacked. So he's a very positive addition in that regard.
Is Moura, Andy, someone who can do this on a game-to-game basis, or will we see him do this one every five games and then just sort of sit about?
I'm pretty hopeful that he'll be able to make the most of things in the Premier League. I mean, it's always difficult to come in mid-season, especially when his confidence was a bit drained, because the season before Neymar arrived in Paris, he was Unai Emery's most used player and then just cast aside. Now, of course, I suppose that's normal when Neymar arrives, but, you know, I think he had every right to feel a bit cheesed off by it and to feel a bit deflated by it as well. So I think, you know, people can knock January transfers, but actually in the sense of him having 6 months to bed in, it's obviously worked really well. I mean, he's come into this season like he's really ready. And he was consistent for Paris in that last season there. I think he can do it here.
He said of his time at PSG under Emery, it was the worst 7 months of my life. Jose Mourinho didn't do anything of note, Barry, did he, at the end of that game and in the press conference after that game?
Yeah, well, his applause of the fans that remained in the Stretford end at the final whistle was, I think, slightly staged for the cameras. And then he went in and gave a quite remarkable press conference, even by his own standards. You know, the Jose presser, he scowled to him contemptuously throughout, tick, throw a player under the bus, tick, refer to former glories, tick, turn questions back on the journalists who asked them, tick, demand respect, tick, claim they won the tactical battle, tick, infer that the result wasn't important, which is not something he usually does, this is a new one, and suggest that the opinion of the fans is all that matters, tick, and walk out in a strop. After being asked a hard question by Jamie Jackson.
Well, it wasn't really a hard question. Jamie just said, you lost 3-0, yeah. Didn't he? Which is a fact. You know, and I can understand some people saying, you know, we continually talk about Mourinho, but Manchester United are the biggest club in the country, potentially the world, Lars. There are clearly just huge problems there.
Yeah, I think it was interesting to see him in a way revert to old Mourinho, in the sense that his team has just suffered a very bad result and he immediately turns it into sort of a spectacle about himself. Perhaps he's taken some of the attention away from their struggles on the pitch there, which is something he used to do. But of course, as you point out, Barry, it was all about defending his own record. And it is interesting to hear a man who has always throughout his career talked so much about how results are the only thing that matters and performance is not that important and having a lot of chances is not that important. It's the only thing that matters is who wins. Now turn around on that when it's convenient for him. It's also interesting to hear a man who always treated Arsene Wenger with such reverence and respect talk about how managers need to be respected for their past glories. I'd really like to see the reaction if I don't know, let's say Brendan Rodgers or someone after a 3-0 home defeat declares that he won the game tactically and strategically and then runs out demanding respect. I mean, I wonder if Mourinho is maybe the only manager in world football who can do that, and a lot of people will still be on side. It's very fascinating.
The saddest thing is it just seemed like really rehearsed outrage. Like, all the lines seem really rehearsed. Normally, you know, you could imagine him like almost as Not a stand-up, but the perfect after-dinner speaker, couldn't you? The absolute top of after-dinner speakers, because he's got an answer for everything. But in fact, he's rehearsed everything, and he's gonna get it all out there no matter what the questions are. And, you know, I think that says a lot about where he is at the moment. I mean, a lot of people still saw it as sacrilege last season when you could say, look, most managers or head coaches, if you look back through European football history, some of the very best, they don't normally get more than 10 years of absolutely smashing it out of the park. And maybe his time has just gone. You know, maybe the best of him has just gone. And even last season, people were saying, oh, you can't say that. You can't say that. It's Jose Mourinho. But actually, I think more people are coming around to the fact you can say that.
And it is probably true that us in the media, we do tend to read maybe too much into what's said in press conferences and body language and all the stuff, because that's what we've got to work with. But if you look at Man United's problems, if you look at the games, the goals they've conceded, as Mourinho is so happy to point out, a lot of it comes from individual mistakes. Now, I don't think it helps his players in their pursuit of not making individual mistakes that he's so happy to throw them under the bus, that he's so happy to point out that it was all their fault that he lost. I don't think that breeds confidence. I don't think that breeds safety and security. And I think it makes it more likely that players will make mistakes the next time they go on the pitch.
Yes, but to defend him a little bit, he wanted Toby Alderweireld, right? And Ed Woodward wouldn't sanction that signing because Alderweireld's too old and there's a resale amount. And Alderweireld made a great tackle. He had a great game, but he made a great tackle in the match. And apparently the fans around Ed Woodward turned around and were like, look, he's really good. You know, and Jose did want him and, you know, he would have improved their defence. Harry Maguire would improve their defence.
Yeah, I don't... Would he, though? I mean, probably... Well, yes. Over a year ago, you'd have said Victor Lindelof would improve their defence. He didn't.
Yeah,
he's a joke. He's a laughing stock at this stage.
He's not got a great recent record for making players better. I mean, essentially, there is a line that he's turned into Arsene Wenger, isn't it? You know, he can't make players better anymore. And that, you know, the fact that he sat there demanding respect for winning three Premier Leagues when
How much the departure of his sidekick towards the end of last season has affected what he's trying to do. And maybe, what's his name?
Rui Faria.
Maybe Rui Faria is the brains behind that particular operation. Who knows? I don't know.
I like the comparison to Wenger. I mean, hopefully Jose will stay for 18 years.
Just be furious throughout. But I do certainly think that the manager not being backed in the transfer window was a key factor in this game. You can only imagine what the score would have been if Pochettino had gotten anyone.
I mean. But if you're a Manchester United fan, you know, I don't know who your ire is. Is your because they're so angry with Ed Woodward, because he said that...
you can be angry with both, can't you?
Yeah, you can.
I mean, the thing is, I don't buy this well... This line of Mourinho can't complain about not getting out of the rail because his previous signings haven't been any cop. I mean, it's not really a transfer strategy to say, oh, well, you know, you've just got to persevere with the players you've got before. Manchester United can't be thinking like that, can they? If someone's not working for them, they've got to buy someone else. I suppose whether you trust Jose Mourinho's judgment and Jose Mourinho's ability to coach them into a state where they provide their best is another question.
So what happens now? What happens now? Does Jose stay? Did Manchester United change their financial strategy in buying players? What happens?
I mean, if we're having a serious Man United discussion, it's worth saying they're not wrong to be as angry with Woodward as they are to be annoyed with Mourinho, because you look at the way the club's been run in the sort of post-Ferguson era. I would argue that if a club goes from appointing David Moyes to appointing Louis van Gaal to appointing Mourinho, I would suggest that the people in charge have no idea what they're doing, but certainly no direction. What's the concept of Man United? What's the team meant to play like? What type of players are you meant to have in that team? Do you have a style? Do you have an identity? Do you have anything? Because Van Gaal, as much as what he was trying to do failed, what he was trying to do is completely opposite to what type of football Mourinho wants to play. And Mourinho spent almost a year, I think his words were, unlearning some of the stuff they'd done under Van Gaal. And they don't seem to have a direction at all. It seems like they've just found, okay, this guy Mourinho is the most successful guy on the market. He's won so many things. If we put him in charge and chuck a good amount of money after him, he'll make us great again. But I think a club needs to have a clearer vision than that, and that needs to come from the top. And the fans, of course, are entirely justified in being annoyed that there isn't any vision at all, it seems.
Mike says, please can you ask the pod about Craig Pawson? He is very freshly coiffured every time we see him. The hair of Craig Pawson, has that piqued any interest?
I think referees' hair in general is better maintained than it has been in the past.
Interesting. Although the linesman, at, I think it was at Wall City, the one who looks like Ming the Merciless. His name escapes me, but he has a nice sort of round moustache, but he doesn't pay a lot of attention to his hair. That is important, everyone. In other Spurs news, Barry, Heung-min Son is one game away from missing national service. And I've sort of treated this story with a bit of, oh, he'll be fine. They won't really make him do national service. But the more you read about it, the more you see that actually he really does need to win this game, or he's got to do national service.
Yeah, I remember before the World Cup reading that unless he is part of a South Korean team that wins the World Cup, the Olympics, or the Asian Games, he will have to do national service. Winning any of those tournaments would get him an exemption. He's very unlikely to win the World Cup, very unlikely to win the Olympics. But, yeah, they're in the final of the Asian Games. And I would imagine Spurs fans everywhere will be rooting for South Korea. Mm. No doubt they'd be rooting for them anyway, because they all like Son. But, yeah, they'd lose him for 2 years.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's precedent. 2012, 26-year-old then Arsenal striker Park Chu-young used a residency permit he'd obtained in Monaco as grounds for a 10-year delay on duties. His decision triggered furious criticism back home. He was dropped from the national team and had to go return to Seoul to apologise. In 2010, MC Mong, a reality TV and hip-hop artist, was accused of using a dentist rather than a lawyer to keep himself out of the military.
Could Son claim to have bone spurs, well, like Donald Trump?
Possibly. This reality star was alleged to have two healthy teeth removed in an attempt to invalidate himself on medical grounds. Ended up with a 6-month suspended jail term. Psy, of Gangnam Style fame, served twice after being redrafted for the crime of continuing a sideline pop career during his first spell in the military.
But I just wonder, what would Son do in the military? Because he seems very pleasant. Like, I have a very hard time imagining him manning a machine gun or something. I mean, that would be very strange.
Yes, but he'd be good on the long runs, wouldn't he? Because he never stops going.
Like, in basic training, he'd be fine. Like, but as a frontline soldier, what would he be doing? Maybe
a courier.
You
see him as like a Robin Williams in Good Morning Vietnam type character.
Host a radio show.
Yeah, maybe. Why not?
What's the age limit? So would you have to do it before he's 30?
It's a very good question, and I'm going to say yes.
Right. Just realise I may have insulted all military personnel out there by suggesting they're not pleasant. I'm sure a bunch of you are.
Lars hates,
probably even all of you. I don't know.
Lars hates soldiers more than he hates Burnley.
I used to have a flatmate who was a officer in the...
Some of my best friends in the army.
He was in the Norwegian Air Force, and he made a fantastic soup.
Okay. The lino with the thin goatee is Stephen Child, everybody. And the other final bit of Spurs news, Gary Mabbott said a rat ate part of his foot while he was asleep on holiday in South Africa. He's visiting his daughter, who was on holiday. He was visiting his daughter, who's working at the Kruger National Park. His quote, "All the opponents that I've played against, and I finally get taken out by a rat. I've gone to sleep. During the night, a rat has come into the bedroom, climbed into the bed, and decided to chew on my foot. He came back for medical treatment. He's okay. There's a bit more medical treatment needed. But it does beg the question. I think I would wake up. I don't know. I just believe I would."
Well, Gary Mabbott is a type 1 diabetic, and I think a symptom is of diabetes is bad circulation.
Oh, okay.
Which can lead to diabetics having problem with their feet, and a lot of them end up having to get their toes, or indeed feet, amputated if they're very unlucky, or if they don't look after themselves properly. I'm not suggesting Gary Mabbott doesn't look after himself. He clearly looked after himself very well to have such a distinguished career while suffering from type 1 diabetes. But that would explain the numbness of his foot. Right. And my God, the thought, if I woke up and saw a rat in my bed, I just can't. Ugh. I can't think of anything more horrifying.
Never mind the eating bit. He's a very, very brave man to even talk about it, I think, let alone actually tolerate it. I also love the fact that even though he's no longer a footballer, he still tells the story in the footballer's tense. You see, I've woke up halfway through the night and the rat's eating my foot.
He came on Fantasy Football before I killed that TV show. A total gentleman. I mean, we'll say one of the nicest men in football, but genuinely one of the nicest men in football. And the story, he told a brilliant story about 87, where Tottenham had presumed they were going to win the cup, and so they arranged the open top bus parade, and they had to do it, you know, a big sort of thing at the town hall with a marquee. And on the open top bus parade, because he'd scored that own goal, which basically won Coventry the FA Cup final, so many people had written banners saying, "We don't blame you, Gary. It's not your fault, Mavs." Thinking, this is not the bus parade I wanted.
Funnily enough, actually, that own goal led to one of the best fanzine titles I've ever heard of. There's a Coventry City fanzine, I don't know if it's still going, called Gary Mabbott's Knee.
Yeah, that is brilliant, isn't it? Oh, look, we wish him well. That is the end of part two. That is the end of part one. That is the end of part one. In part two, we will open the Carabao box. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. On the 5th of September, Barry, we are at the Royal Northern College of Music, a leading music conservatoire and performance venue.
Great.
Me, you, Sid. You're coming, Lars?
I am.
Excellent. Luke says, good evening, Max and Sid. My best mate who works at a well-known Spanish restaurant can provide you with the ham for your visit to Manchester. He says he's open to offers. Bear in mind, we've already got tickets for the podcast. What can we offer him in return for the ham?
Crikey. Money? Some drinks?
I don't think we want to pay for it, do we? Isn't the whole idea we get stuff for
free?
So we're
just buying ham is what we're doing.
Yeah, I suppose.
You can give him some cigarettes, and Lars, you can bring one of your breakfasts, and we'll swap it.
Okay. But since we have this musical theme going, I should point out that if someone brings a working euphonium, I can theoretically play it.
Stop it! Oh, this is brilliant.
I used to play in like brass bands when I was young, and I've not done so for like 10 years, but it should be like riding a bike, right? So
what can you play? What's the euphonium?
Ideally the euphonium, probably also a baritone.
I did play
the trombone when I was younger, but that's a long time ago.
No, I understand you'll play the euphonium, but I mean, what are you going to play on the euphonium?
Oh, God, I hadn't even thought of that.
Okay.
I regret everything now. I probably wouldn't know what to play.
Okay, suggestions, please, for laughs.
No,
just
laugh.
Mean I'm off the hook.
Absolutely
for a piano
not.
Recital.
No, I think there should be a duet, and then Sid can sing or something.
I'll play the clarinet and Sid can play the ham. So that is next week. Some tickets still available. Please come, Manchester, on the 5th of September. And on the 19th of September, we're in Oslo. Lars, you're coming too.
Yes.
You can show us around.
No euphoniums there, please.
It's your manner, me, Barry and Wilson coming to that one. John Larkin says, is today the day we've all waited for? Will Barry's Carabao Cup box make a triumphant return?
Well, it will make a return. It's sitting here in front of me. It has not been opened. You know, it makes the noise when you open the lid. It has not been opened since, I think, the day after the final of last year's Carabao Cup. So I'm now going to open it. I've no idea if the batteries have run out or not. I suspect they have, but here we go. A triumph.
Oh, that's glorious. Feels like it's slowing down slightly.
It's not as loud as it used to be.
No. I feared the worst because it looks really sad and squashed, like someone's accidentally sat on it.
It will be fun to see if the Carabao Cup box makes it to the Carabao Cup final. He's got some months to go. Newcastle out of the cup early again. 3-1 at Nottingham Forest. Doesn't tell the whole story, Barry, does it?
No. Newcastle were absolutely abject. And that's Newcastle in cup competitions. They don't... Mike Ashley has no interest in winning them. I suspect Rafa Benitez probably doesn't have too much interest in winning them either, because he's just interested in keeping them in the Premier League. I have no idea why Rafa Benitez is still at the club, but he is, and for that Newcastle fans should be very grateful. And it was a good performance by Nottingham Forest, who, you know, just one of those clubs. I really like Nottingham Forest. I like the name, I like everything about them. They're one of those clubs I think most people just like. And it's nice to see them do well, but they didn't have.
But
to
I mean, Newcastle equalised in the 90th minute, and then Nottingham Forest scored twice after them in the 90th minute. Someone had £29,000 resting on Nottingham Forest to win 2-1 in his ACCA. And then they scored again in the 97th minute.
I mean, basically, that's just another person who'd be angry with Kennedy after he gave the ball away to Gilles Dias, who went ahead and finished very nicely for the third goal. But going back to what Barry was saying about them having no interest in winning the cup competition, what I don't understand is how does the team selection come about there? Like, you think, oh, well, we're going to save everyone for Manchester City away at the weekend. I mean, what difference is it going to make? Is it the difference between getting beat 3-0 and 5-0? Just play your proper team and make an effort. There were so many fans who came down from Newcastle in the middle of the week to watch that game, and you know, just be thinking, what's the point?
It's a good question, though. What is the point? I mean,
In his match report, Paul Doyle says the performance of Benitez's side suggested another pertinent question: what is the point of Newcastle? And I mean, he'll probably get dog's abuse for that from Newcastle fans, but I don't know. It's an interesting question.
I don't know if he will, Barry, because actually I don't have the question to hand, but a tweeter to the pod has written in, what is the point of Newcastle? And that's from a Newcastle United fan.
But aren't they one of the many sort of Premier League clubs who are in a bit of an existential hole because they shouldn't go down, really, but they're not like anywhere close to qualifying for Europe or winning a cup or something, so they're just kind of ticking along.
Oh, I don't think they're that safe. I think that massively overrates how good they are.
Well, probably not. But in theory, they should be that team. But maybe because of underinvestment, they might actually be in actual trouble. And then I guess the point of Newcastle is that they might have a fun relegation scrap.
such a thing?
I'd rather risk relegation than just come 12th every year, I think. Ram says, what box set can I start watching if I want to finish it before the next time Saido Berahino scores again? Stoke 2, Huddersfield 0. Berahino's last competitive goal was February the 27th, 2016. My dad's birthday, interestingly. In West Brom's 3-2 Premier League victory over Crystal Palace, 913 days without finding the net. He said, I had chances. I could have had a hat-trick if I'd been a bit more clinical, but I kept going, made sure I got myself into those goal-scoring positions. The ball fell kindly for me with that header. I mean, it just went over the line.
Well, I've taken a keen interest in Saido Berahino since last season. I wrote an article about, I worked out the exact number of box sets you could watch in the time it had been since he last scored. It was a lot. I'm really sad I haven't seen his goal yet, but I heard he nearly missed it. And I really, really want to know, did he cup his ear or shush the crowd as he was wheeled away in celebration?
He said he wasn't really sure what to do, but he was enveloped by his teammates before we could see if he'd rehearsed something or had like a huge, like 912 t-shirts on underneath his shirt. They go to West Brom at the weekend. You couldn't write it. An on-form Berahino could get a hat-trick, couldn't he?
The other unfortunate thing is, you know, he didn't come anywhere near scoring the most headline-grabbing goal of the game after that Juninho Bakuna own goal.
I mean, which describe is pretty it. It's absolutely fantastic.
Spectacular. Well, he managed to lob it over his goalkeeper from the halfway line, basically, didn't he? The goalkeeper was quite high advance. I mean, he clearly didn't look. It reminded me a little bit of when Raphael van der Vaart was playing at Hamburg, when they were going for the league title and they needed to win a game at home. They were 1-0 down, or at least get something from it. They were 1-0 down in the 90th minute and everyone was up, including the goalkeeper. Now, he got the ball on the edge of the box, or maybe a little bit further out, about 30 yards from goal, and he hit it back towards the goalkeeper, thinking he'll recycle it and just throw it back into the mixer. But the goalkeeper had come up for the corner, so basically he just whacked it back towards his own goal, and one of the other players just ran in and tapped it in.
You sort of feel he must have had his eyes closed at the point of impact. You know, a real skill in football is kicking the ball, and when Bakuna kicked the ball, I don't think he was focusing on kicking the ball.
Well, all we can say from that sort of range, actual Juninho Pernambucano would be pretty proud of scoring from that sort of distance, wouldn't he?
By the way, Ram, in 913 days, it wasn't quite your question, but you could have watched every episode of EastEnders ever 5 times with 8 hours sleep a night.
Crikey.
Imagine. By the time you get around to watching it for a third time, you might move on to something else, wouldn't you? I think.
Ricky!
I'm looking at the Bakuna and go, like, what is he trying to do?
He's trying to get it back in the
mix. Just whack it. Mm. Yeah.
It's a great moment.
The level of shank.
Bielsa's first defeat for Leeds. They went down 2-0 at home to Preston. Leicester 4, Fleetwood 0. I mentioned this just purely for a glorious strike from Christian Fuchs.
Oh, yeah.
I retweeted that this morning if you want to go and have a look at it. AFC Wimbledon 1, West Ham 3. Andy Brassel, you were there. Pellegrini's first win, a momentous moment.
Yeah, and he came around afterwards being the gentleman he is and gave very warm, sincere handshakes to the younger Wimbledon players, who, of course, had quite a difficult job because they went 1-0 up in the second minute and then went down to 10 men after 18 minutes. So I know West Ham juggled their team a bit. Arnautovic wasn't there. But they still had a lot of talent and a lot of expensive players on the pitch. They brought Felipe Anderson on at half-time. And it's extraordinary, really, the fact that Wimbledon played for 72 minutes of normal time with 10 men, and yet they still led for an hour. I mean, West Ham were so desperate to get that first win of the season over the line. And yeah, of course, they did deserve it. But when they were 2-1 up in the 90th minute, they brought off Yarmolenko and on Masuaku to presumably, you know, close out the game. You thought, well, Wimbledon haven't had the ball for 10 minutes. I mean, it's a bit overcautious. But everyone's a winner because West Ham got their win, yeah. And Wimbledon got a pat on the back for being all valiant and stuff.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Andy, what's the capacity at King's Meadow?
About 4,800.
Oh, okay, right.
And it was, interestingly, because the ticket sale process was so complicated, it didn't sell out. It was the lowest crowd of the season.
Right.
Obviously, like, partly affected perhaps by the fact that it was the third home game in a week and it was on telly anyway.
Barry?
Yeah.
We've got a photo shoot later, haven't we?
Oh, God.
Have you trimmed your beard?
Yes.
I've never seen you.
I've got a haircut.
Have you?
Yeah.
Look at you. Oh, that's nice, isn't it?
Is he the Julian Nagelsmann of your partnership?
I've never seen him. Barry's actually really thought about it. Before the pod, he's like, I hate these things. I don't want to go.
Well, I do hate them and I don't want to go. But I have to go, so I might as well, you know, you can't polish a turd, but you can try. You can roll it in glitter.
That accent, Max, where is Barry from in your head?
Somewhere in Scandinavia, obviously. Did Declan Rice score in that game?
No, he didn't, but he played pretty well.
Okay.
And he was talking before the game of how it was a big deal for him because he lives half a mile up the road and he used to go and watch Wimbledon.
Because in other Declan Rice news, he's thinking about switching allegiances from Ireland to England. Barry, yeah. Kevin Kilbane is very angry with him and says, we don't need that sort of man in our squad. Martin,
I tell you, it takes some doing to incur the wrath of Kilbane.
Doesn't it? What are your thoughts as a proud Irish man?
My thoughts are, I don't know the ins and outs of his situation. I would like him to play for the Republic of Ireland, but I think if he has to think about it, then go and play for England, because unless you really do want to play for Ireland, it's a no-brainer, because England are a lot better. And England will, declaring for England and getting in the England team, if he does, I think, you know, he has to get in the West Ham team first.
I was going
to
say, there is one small issue with all of this at the moment.
It would be a lot more lucrative, you know, but, and as I say, if it's something he has to think about, then I don't think Ireland's the place for him.
In England news, it looks like Gareth Southgate's going to drop Ashley Young and bring Luke Shaw in, who played very well, actually, in that Manchester United-Spurs game. James Tarkowski should come in for the injured Phil Jones. Southampton's Alex McCarthy might come in for Nick Pope, who's done his shoulder. Jamie Vardy and Gary Cahill have sort of vaguely retired from international duty, have both said, look, if you're desperate, we'll play, but we don't really want to.
Do you reckon they could, like, sort of do a breakaway alternative England team with Sam Allardyce as coach?
Well, there is Big Sam news as well. But before we get to that Big Sam news, did you see Richard Keys tweeting about Jamie Vardy and Gary Cahill? He says, Vardy and Cahill have covered themselves, leaving the door open, but I will never understand a player walking out on his country. It says a lot about his personality and lack of character. For sure he will let you down badly again later in life. I was thinking, I can't imagine a situation where Jamie Vardy or Gary Cahill are going to let me down later in life. I don't know if anyone else feels like that's likely to happen.
Well, look, we are. There's a few skeletons rattling around Richard's closet, which would suggest he's not really one to be sermonising about loyalty. So,
a few hours later, he said, "Just to be clear, no criticism of Vardy or Cahill intended." You've just said they'll let you bad. It just makes it's just so bizarre, isn't it? How's going to let you down badly later in life? What's going to happen? What situation could possibly arise where, you know, you're on a plane and Jamie Vardy is the only one who can fly a plane and refuses to land it. So, you know, when you're 70 years old, I don't know.
Walk out of the Masters at halftime. I mean,
possible. Yeah. Big Sam, you mentioned to him, Andy, he's lost his complaint that the Daily Telegraph broke journalism's rules by sending that undercover reporter to propose business deals and discuss rules on third-party ownership. He lodged 25 complaints about the story. The Independent Press Standards Organisation, IPSO, found in the paper's favour on 22 of those points. Of the three complaints that IPSO upheld, one related to a suggestion Allardyce had implied third parties could benefit from transfer fees, which wasn't true. Two wrongly implied Allardyce had offered to tell the Telegraph's reporters how to break ownership rules. The Telegraph published a correction on that. IPSO did rule the Telegraph's use of subterfuge was justified. You imagine both sides will come out of this saying, well, we won.
Yeah. I mean, I still think the Football Association jumped the gun and fired him too quickly. I don't think he did anything particularly wrong apart from come across as a bit of a blowhard. But, you know, we all Big Sam's a bit of a blowhard. We all know that. But given the fact that Southgate has done such a good job after replacing him, I don't think England fans will have too many complaints. But I have a certain amount of sympathy for Big Sam and the way he's treated that time.
Hal Robson-Kahn, who's retired from international football as well for Wales, to spend more time with his family, dedicate what time I have available to them, choosing to focus on my club career within sport and time needed away from the games, what he said. And he will be remembered for that goal against Belgium, the best Cruyff turn since Johan Cruyff.
Well, I know Ellis James and Danny Gabaldon are very surprised that Ryan Giggs wasn't picking him. You know, he hasn't featured in a Wales squad under Giggsy, I think, and they can't figure out why, because he's playing okay for West Brom, he's scoring, he's had a better start to the season than Sam Vokes, and they think it might maybe be a personal thing. But, you know, Jack Pitbrook of The Independent did a very interesting, a very, very strange interview with Robson-Kahn, who few weeks ago, where he's got a lot of other irons in the fire, business interests, and he's into sort of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency and stuff like that, that I really don't understand. But it's a fascinating read if you dig it out. But so I don't know if he's going to, you know, the family reasons thing, I suspect, might not be totally
you can't say in true. A statement, I want to focus on my cryptocurrency. Yeah. It doesn't quite have the same
thing. I think he's retiring because Ryan Giggs has no place for him in the squad.
The Germany manager, Joachim Löw, says Mesut Özil's claims of racism within the national team are exaggerated. Özil quit, obviously citing racism and disrespect he faced over his Turkish roots. These are Löw's comments, his quotes. His claims of racism are exaggerated within my team during my time here. There's not been a hint of racism. My only intention was to prepare for the World Cup. The issue of Özil having that photo with Erdogan cost us energy because it was always there. It's no excuse for our performance. That was not the reason. And then he goes on to say that Özil never called him. And normally players call the manager. Özil hasn't answered his phone to Jogi Löw, so that's what's happened.
On the other hand, it does to me feel like Joachim Löw is, I don't know if you can say purposely, but certainly misunderstanding his complaint. Mm. I don't think he ever said it was anything within the team.
I agree
he?
With that, yeah.
He said, you know, his problems were with the DFB and the management. I have to say, this issue's been taken so far from where it actually is. It's just, people have just used this as a stick to beat Mesut Özil with, in a way that they've been waiting to get on him. I just think it's unbelievable. Like, all of this has nothing to do with how you feel about him as a player. I just find it extraordinary. And it's especially extraordinary when in 2014 he was, you know, look at the successful integration of Germany, and this is the man who proves it. And now, because there's a situation that's been difficult to deal with, that they haven't really wanted to let him explain or talk about, and is perhaps more complex than people would like to recognise, he's just been completely thrown under the bus. And I suspect he probably doesn't really care that much about what the DFB think of him as a bloke. But like teammates who he's been through a lot with, who turn round and say, well, look, we don't want to be tainted by association, so we wash our hands of you, basically. I think that must be quite hurtful.
Hmm. I mean, Ozil's statement on his meeting with Erdogan, you sort of think it might have been better in this case as well for Love to just not... I mean, what's Jogi Love achieving by saying this? Like, I guess even if he's asked the question, you can deflect it, can't you? Rather than trying to fan the flames of it.
No, I mean, I can understand... You know, teams close ranks. We understand that. But closing ranks to protect the DFB, who've handled the situation really badly, I don't understand that at all. Yeah, I would be very disappointed if I was him. And like even though he was quite specific before, when he never said, I retire from international football. He said, I'm not going to allow myself to be picked for Germany for the moment. Basically thinking, if things change upstairs, leaving the door open for him to come back. But even if the president did change, I don't know if he'd come back after this.
Mark asks, what does Barry, Fitbar buff Glendenning, think of where the Scottish national team should play? And does he think that Hampden Park was badly designed as the seats face the pitch? Thank you, Mark. A decision on whether Scotland will play their home games at Hampden or Murrayfield from 2020 has been delayed. The seven-strong Scottish FA board met for several hours on Wednesday, but were unable to come to a conclusion. So,
right.
So they don't know.
And I certainly don't know if they don't know.
It's Hampden or Murrayfield.
I've been in Murrayfield. It was a very intimidating atmosphere at a rugby match, but I've never been to a game in Hampden, so...
And that's why you're our Fitbar man.
Yeah.
The FA has come out in favour of clubs being allowed to have safe standing areas in what campaigners say is a significant move towards a change in the law in all-seater stadia. The FSF are very supportive of this. I think everybody in the room believes safe standing is a good idea if done well. Everyone is nodding. So that's good. And that'll do for part three.
Two.
Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Listeners will be pleased to know you've just missed, in the break, Lars Sivertsen doing a 10-minute review of Ty's biggest rock band. We will save that sort of review for the international break, Lars, where we may need the content. Liam writes, with Watford, Palace, Everton, Fulham, Wolves and Bournemouth all teams below the traditional top six, does Barry still maintain the Premier League is riddled with terrible, not very good, non-big six teams?
I think it's too early to say, but certainly I've been impressed with Fulham, I've been impressed with Bournemouth, I've been impressed with Wolves, and Watford, of course. But yeah, there's still a fair amount of dross, but they are teams who will cause teams in the supposed big six plenty of trouble.
Four teams with the 100% records, two play each other. Spurs go to Watford on Sunday. Chelsea host Bournemouth on Saturday.
Sorry, I should add, I've also been impressed with Brighton. I don't think I mentioned them and I don't want to upset their supporters.
You hate Brighton. Four teams with 100% records, then two play each other. Spurs go to Watford on Sunday. Chelsea host Bournemouth on Saturday, 3 o'clock, and Liverpool go to Leicester in the early Saturday kickoff. Alex says, pod thoughts on Liverpool hype, overblown or justified? Same level of hype hasn't been given to the other three out of three teams, Chelsea, Spurs and Watford, when Chelsea and Spurs have both beaten a top six team already. Andy, overblown Liverpool hype.
I don't know about that. I mean, isn't most of the confidence around Liverpool based around more than just those three results? It's about them building on the Champions League final and improving all their areas of weakness during the transfer window. And of course, a lot of those players haven't got on the pitch yet because they haven't been needed. I don't think the hype is based around that 1-0 win over Brighton.
There's also, during the rounds, Liverpool posted a very nice video of Virgil van Dijk Andy Robertson, Daniel Sturridge and a couple of others making a carrot cake. So I'll point you in that direction. Although it's a tease because they show you the whole video and it finishes with them putting it in the oven and you don't know if the cake is nice or not. So you have to get their telly or something to find out, and I don't care about it that much. Man City, Newcastle. What tactics will Rafa adopt for this one?
I expect him to adopt similar tactics to the one he got so roundly criticised for adopting against Chelsea. Very negative, try and contain Manchester City. I think it nearly worked against Chelsea. I don't think it'll work against City. But what's his alternative? To go out and take the game to them with a team that isn't very good? A team where it seems he's fallen out with two of his best players. I don't know if they'll be considered for selection. And a team that had recently had two players have a training ground fight. They had to be pulled apart. So if he plays an expansive game, they'll get absolutely slaughtered. So I would expect more of the same. It won't be pretty on the eye and it probably won't work. But I'm not sure what else he can really do.
Brighton, Fulham, Palace, Southampton, Everton, Huddersfield, West Ham play Wolves. West Ham still pointless. And we've looked at their fixtures and we did it on Monday. They could be pointless in November, West Ham, which would be sad for West Ham. It's quite funny.
Is there an outside chance that West Ham could end up with 2 points from 8 games and in need of a new manager?
And who possibly?
If only there was a manager who has experience of taking clubs with 2 points from 8 games and getting them out of trouble, that would be amazing.
I was thinking of a different one.
I was thinking of the one you were thinking of straight away. And then I suddenly realised, 2 points from 8 games.
You could get Harry and Sam in together.
That would be amazing.
Great fun. On Sunday, Cardiff play Arsenal. Manchester United go to Burnley on Sunday. Burnley have got a 3-1 deficit to overturn tonight in the Europa League at home to Olympiacos. Craig says, with Burnley conceding 7, but only having an XG of 4.4, has Lars's last season prediction finally come true about Burnley not being as good as they seem?
But last season's prediction, I also then moderated after reading articles written by smarter people than myself, who pointed out that part of the reason why Burnley's shot statistic was insane was that they had a way of almost putting opponents into positions where they would take shots from ineffective ranges and angles and things. Like they had a very high number of shots against them in situations where they had more than one player in position to block that shot. So the sort of Deitchian football is kind of what Mourinho would no doubt call controlling the game without having the ball.
Sounds like you're backtracking on your Burnley hate now.
I'm just acknowledging that some of my bombast might have been misplaced at the time, which I'm going to do that and say instead of saying I told you so. But what I will say is that sort of playing in that way, allowing the opponent to have that much of the ball, the second you're not 100% there mentally or physically, once you start losing the 50-50s, once players are not in the exact position they need to be, that suddenly becomes a very, very ineffective way of playing football. And I do wonder if the extra Europa League strain, the travel, the games, the unusual rhythm of playing on Thursdays is affecting this. Well, I'm quite certain it is.
So they won't have to worry after tonight.
I mean, that would seem to be the case for sure. But can I also say that, like, I think you're being unnecessarily harsh on the whole Carabao thing because
I want the Thai rock band.
Yeah, learning
for the wind and the rain, because, Lars.
Because learning that the Carabao Cup is not, in fact, named after a buffalo, it is named after an energy drink that's named after a rock band that seems to be named after a buffalo.
But the logo of the competition is a buffalo skull.
But did you know there was a rock band involved? And that is the most interesting Carabao Cup related thing that happened to me this week. And I wanted to
kill you when you were telling us about it. That's how boring it was.
Rangers are 1-0 up as they go to Ufa. Celtic at home to Suduva. That's poised at 1-1. Then on Sunday, Rangers v Celtic. Gerrard v Rodgers. It should be exciting, shouldn't it? Midday kickoff, Baz?
I'm really looking forward to it, and I have a feeling Rangers might beat Celtic because Celtic haven't got off to a very good start to the season. They've gone out of the Champions League, not doing brilliantly in the league.
Moussa Dembélé might be away by then as well.
Yeah, because he's been linked with...
It looks like he's going to Lyon.
Lyon, yeah. And Rangers are doing really well under Gerrard. I mean, they don't have the financial clout or muscle to compete with Celtic on that level, but I have a feeling that they might just beat them.
It is at Celtic Park, so I disagree with you.
Okay.
But it's okay. Whatever happens, we can remain friends.
In so much as we are friends anyway.
Yeah. The Champions League draw is tonight at 5. Man City in pot 1, Spurs in pot 2 alongside Manchester United, Liverpool in pot 3. You don't want to get Liverpool, do you, in pot 3?
No, absolutely. In fact, I was thinking, looking at the pot 3 teams, I'd be quite glad to be in pot 3 so I didn't have to play Liverpool.
Red Star Belgrade in the Champions League for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, the first time since, well, the first season of the Champions League, which was the season after they won it, which was 91. So, I mean, well, that's 28 years. It's pretty incredible. And especially, they were 2-0 down at Salzburg in the playoff. And Salzburg, obviously backed by another energy drink of... it's been amazing how they haven't made the Champions League, really. This is what their, I think, something like their 10th, 11th attempt at getting through via the playoffs. And they fell short again, which is amazing because they held on to a lot of their good players from last year's run to the Europa League semi-finals. They've got a lot more money than Red Star, who, well, we know where Serbian football is at the moment. And... yeah, they were 2-0 up and cruising, and then Red Star got a couple in the space of about 5 minutes. A lot of supporters there for them in Salzburg, many of whom spilled onto the pitch. So who knows? Maybe there'll be some sort of retrospective UEFA disciplining for that. I suspect there will be. But yeah, it's absolutely incredible for them to get back to the group stages of the Champions League. And, you know, one for traditionalists, really, isn't it?
Yeah. In qualifying for the Women's World Cup of next summer, Wales meet England in Newport on Friday night. The winners guaranteed qualification. The reverse fixture was a goalless draw at St Mary's. England dominated. 79% possession, 22 shots to 3, 6 shots on target to 2, 15 corners to 1. But it was a goalless draw. This is Wales' final game. They could still make the playoffs if they lose. They will go for the win. So hopefully it'll be more goals than the first game. Good luck to Phil Neville and his side, unless you're Welsh, of course. Does anyone want to represent
the
Welsh?
When Phil was appointed, he came out with this really weird thing saying that I'm under no illusions. Everyone wants me to fail. And it just seemed a very paranoid thing to say, because I don't think anyone particularly wants him to fail. I'd quite like to see him do well.
I mean, he is one of your nemesis.
I have many nemesis.
You do? It's moved from him to Richard Keys this week.
Richard Keys is not worthy of my time.
No, but what did you argue with him about?
I just mentioned him in a column I wrote about women's football, and he took exception to what I'd said. I hadn't insulted him or anything. I just wondered what he'd have thought of Chelsea manager's Emma Hayes' suggestion that there will, within a generation, be a woman manager of a Premier League side. And Richard said he thought it would be great. Said he hoped it would be one of the girls from one of the women's teams he sponsors in Coventry. I'm not sure what teams they are. And then he insulted our radio show.
He's not the first.
No.
This story from the Copa Libertadores. Have you seen this? The second leg game between Santos of Brazil and Independiente of Argentina was abandoned after police clashed with the home crowd, who'd been told 12 hours before kickoff that rather than being level on aggregate, they were actually 3-0 down. So they drew the first game 0-0 in Buenos Aires 12 hours before the game started. Officials at CONMEBOL, the organisation that run the football there, changed the result to a 3-0 win to Independiente because one of the players had not served the entirety of his ban when he got a red card playing for River Plate, handed out 3 years before. So you're getting ready for the game and it's 0-0 on aggregate, and then you switch on the radio and you're 3-0 down. Although, obviously, that doesn't give you the right to run on the pitch and cause all sorts of problems.
You think there'd be some sort of statute of limitations, wouldn't you?
What, after 3 years?
Well, if the ban's not been successfully applied.
Would you say it's, as long as Saido Berahino has scored within that time, then the ban is not overturned? Santos appealed. The 3-0 result was upheld. The second game abandoned with no change in that overall score. Independiente are through. Jonathan, producer Jonathan says, could Zidane play in the World Cup now, or is he still banned? He must have served that ban. Questions and goodbyes. This is from Football Geek. Which Guardian podcaster would be the best bank robber, like Stefan Powells? Or what crime would each of you be good at other than crimes of comedy? Thank you. This is a fascinating story. One of Belgium's top football TV presenters, I don't know if any of you have seen this, has been charged with armed robbery during a raid in an affluent Brussels satellite town. He was arrested in a major police probe. Powells is suspected of armed robbery with a firearm at night as part of a gang, according to the federal prosecutor, Venker Rogan, who was speaking to AFP. It's a bit... So that's sort of like Gary Lineker going on a rampage. It's totally bizarre. I don't know. What would you be good at?
I'm quite law-abiding. I've always thought I'd be a pretty good assassin.
Those two sentences together. There wasn't a big enough pause. Normally there are lots of big pauses in your sentences, but that was quite... How do you think? Sort of like... Well, Leon.
Good shot with a rifle.
Are you?
Yeah, I discovered by accident when I went to try my hand at biathlon.
That's true.
And I just think I'd be good at it.
I mean, would you want to start a sideline?
No.
Okay. Fine, that's good to know. On the subject of Kevin Nolan sacking Forts and Notts, we all said it was ridiculous. He is a Notts County fan, says the form has been poor since January. Only won 8 in 2018, probably not the worst decision of the season. On the subject of fonts of banners, Adam says someone needs to come up with a Jose font, don't they? Which I enjoyed. Or a Just Fontaine. I think you should have stopped at Jose font, to be honest. Finally, this from Tom to Rome. Hearing that guy in Quebec resonates with me. There's a man in Quebec who... His only connection with real life is listening to this podcast. He's got no trees, no bar, no people anywhere near him. He says, hearing about that guy in Quebec resonates with me. I'm listening to the pod while walking 2,000 kilometres across Europe from England to Rome. Unlike many of you, I'm begging for each episode to overrun. An hour is like 5 or 6 kilometres. Perhaps Barry could send me some daily motivational messages. So Barry, could you... It is not reading out lyrics, so we're not going there again. But if you'd like to send finish the pod by sending a motivational message to Tom.
Maybe get the train, Tom. Go to an airport. I don't know. I presume if you're walking through, it must be some sort of... You're either deranged or doing it for charity. But whichever it is, all the very best to you. And just keep putting one foot in front of the other.
Barry, thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Lars.
Carabao.
Shut up. Andy, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be back on Monday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.
On one of these Carabao Cup pods, we need to talk about the band Carabao that it's named after, because they seem amazing.
Oh, okay.
The what?
Carabao. There's a band called Carabao.
Yeah, their name. I mean, the drink was. Yeah, well, no, the band, the energy drink. The energy drink is named after a Thai rock star and his band.
No,
Carabao.
No, it's named after a Filipino water buffalo.
Yeah, but no, but he's yeah, taken but no, the name but... from. No. No, no, it's a thing.
All right, well, let's not do it today.
they're the biggest rock band in Thailand.
They might be playing at Jonathan's festival.
Yeah. Lead songwriter Aid Carabao is loved by many and is famous for his sharp tongue and open criticism of corrupt politicians, big business, and environmental destruction. at least one or two songs on most albums up to the mid-90s were banned by the government, and coverage of the ban rarely appeared on government TV. Despite this,
Jonathan, can you make Lars stop doing this?
Carabao is the most popular Thai rock group of all time. They have been compared to U2.
Oh, God.